Chapter 17. 1 year, having parted with the other two vagrant dogs in the course of his city rambles, Buddy gets on very well without it, and leads a roving, gentlemanly, vagabond kind of life, somewhat answering to that of our clubmen at home. He leaves his lodgings every morning at a certain hour, throws himself upon the town, gets through his day in some manner quite satisfactory to himself, and regularly appears at the door of his own house again at night, like the mysterious master of Gilblas. He is a free and easy, careless, indifferent kind of pig, having a very large acquaintance among other pigs of the same character, whom he rather knows by sight than conversation, as he seldom troubles himself to stop and exchange civilities, but goes grunting down the kennel, turning up the news and small talk of the city in the shape of cabbage stalks and offal, and bearing no tales but his own. Which is a very short one, for his old enemies, the dogs, have been at that too, and have left him hardly enough to swear by. He is in every respect a republican pig, going wherever he pleases, and mingling with the best society, on an equal, if not superior footing, for everyone makes way when he appears, and the haughtiest give him the wall, if he prefer it. He is a great philosopher, and seldom moved, unless by the dogs before mentioned. Sometimes, indeed, you may see his small eye twinkling on a slaughtered friend, whose carcass garnishes a butcher's doorpost, but he grunts out such is life. All flesh is pork. Buries his nose in the mire again, and waddles down the gutter, comforting himself with the reflection that there is one snout the less to anticipate stray cabbage stalks, at any rate. They are the city scavengers, these pigs. Ugly brutes they are, having, for the most part, scanty brown backs, like the lids of old horsehair trunks, spotted with unwholesome black blotches. They have long, gaunt legs too, and such peaked snouts, that if one of them could be persuaded to sit for his profile, nobody would recognize it for a pig's likeness. They are never attended upon, or fed, or driven, or caught, but are thrown upon their own resources in early life, and become preternaturally knowing in consequence. Every pig knows where he lives, much better than anybody could tell him. At this hour, just as evening is closing in, you will see them roaming towards bed by scores, eating their way to the last. Occasionally, some youth among them who has overeaten himself, or has been worried by dogs, trots shrinkingly homeward, like a prodigal son. But this is a rare case. Perfect self-possession and self-reliance, and immovable composure, being their foremost attributes. The streets and shops are lighted now, and as the eye travels down the long thoroughfare, dotted with bright jets of gas, it is reminded of Oxford Street, or Piccadilly. Here and there a flight of broad stone cellar steps appears, and a painted lamp directs you to the bowling saloon, or ten pally, ten pins being a game of mingled chance and skill, invented when the legislature passed an act forbidding nine pins. At other downward flights of steps, are other lamps, marking the whereabouts of oyster sellers' pleasant retreats, say I. Not only by reason of their wonderful cookery of oysters, pretty nigh as large as cheese plates, or for thy dear sake, heartiest of Greek professors, but because of all kinds of caters of fish, or flesh, or fowl, in these latitudes, the swallowers of oysters alone are not gregarious, but subduing themselves, as it were, to the nature of what they work in, and copying the coyness of the thing they eat, do sit apart in curtain boxes, and consort by twos, not by two hundreds. But how quiet the streets are! Are there no itinerant bands, no wind or stringed instruments? No, not one. By day, are there no punches, fantoxini, dancing dogs, jugglers, conjurers, or chistrinas, or even barrel organs? No, not one. Yes, I remember one. One barrel organ and a dancing monkey, sportive by nature, but fast fading into a dull, lumpish monkey, of the utilitarian school. Beyond that, nothing lively. No, not so much as a white mouse in a twirling cage. Are there no amusements?
Yes. There is a lecture room across the way, from which that glare of light proceeds, and there may be evening service for the ladies thrice a week, or oftener. For the young gentlemen, there is the counting house, the store, the bar room. The latter, as you may see through these windows, pretty full. Hark! To the clinking sound of hammers breaking lumps of ice, and to the cool gurgling of the pounded bits, as, in the process of mixing, they are poured from glass to glass. No amusements? What are these suckers of cigars and swallowers of strong drinks, whose hats and legs we see in every possible variety of twist, doing, but amusing themselves? What are the 50 newspapers, which those precocious urchins are bawling down the street, and which are kept filed within, what are they but amusements? Not vapid, waterish amusements, but good strong stuff, dealing in round abuse and blackguard names, pulling off the roofs of private houses, as the halting devil did in Spain, pimping and pandering for all degrees of vicious taste, and gorging with coined lies the most voracious maw, imputing to every man in public life the coarsest and the vilest motives, scaring away from the stabbed and prostrate body politic every Samaritan of clear conscience and good deeds, and setting on, with yell and whistle and the clapping of foul hands, the vilest vermin and worst birds of prey. No amusements. Let us go on again. And passing this wilderness of an hotel with stores about its base, like some continental theater, or the London Opera House shorn of its colonnade, plunge into the 5 points. But it is needful, first, that we take as our escort these two heads of the police, whom you would know for sharp and well-trained officers, if you met them in the great desert. So true it is, that certain pursuits, wherever carried on, will stamp men with the same character. These two might have been begotten, born, and bred, in Bow Street. We have seen no beggars in the streets by night or day, but of other kinds of strollers, plenty. Poverty, wretchedness, and vice, are rife enough where we are going now. This is the place. These narrow ways, diverging to the right and left, and reeking everywhere with dirt and filth. Such lives as are led here, bear the same fruits here as elsewhere. The coarse and bloated faces at the doors have counterparts at home and all the wide world over. Debauchery has made the very houses prematurely old. See how the rotten beams are tumbling down, and how the patched and broken windows seem to scowl dimly, like eyes that have been hurt in drunken frays. Many of those pigs live here. Do they ever wonder why their masters walk upright in lieu of going on all fours? And why they talk instead of grunting? So far, nearly every house is a low tavern, and on the barroom walls are colored prints of Washington, and Queen Victoria of England, and the American Eagle. Among the pigeon holes that hold the bottles are pieces of plate glass and colored paper, for there is, in some sort, a taste for decoration, even here. And as seamen frequent these haunts, there are maritime pictures by the dozen. Of partings between sailors and their lady loves, portraits of William, of the ballad, and his black-eyed Susan, of Will Watch, the bold smuggler, of Paul Jones the pirate, and the like, on which the painted eyes of Queen Victoria, and of Washington to boot, rest in as strange companionship, as on most of the scenes that are enacted in their wondering presence. What place is this, to which the squalid street conducts us? A kind of square of leprous houses, some of which are attainable only by crazy wooden stairs without. What lies beyond this tottering flight of steps that creak beneath our tread? A miserable room, lighted by one dim candle, and destitute of all comfort, save that which may be hidden in a wretched bed. Beside it sits a man, his elbows on his knees, his forehead hidden in his hands. What ails that man? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asks the foremost officer. Fever, apostrophe, he sullenly replies, without looking up. Conceive the fancies of a feverish brain, in such a place as this. ascend these pitch-dark stairs, heedful of a false footing on the trembling boards, and grope your way with me into this wolfish den, where neither ray of light nor breath of air appears to come. A negro lad, startled from his sleep by the officer's voice, he knows it well, but comforted by his assurance that he has not come on business, officiously bestirs himself to light a candle. The match flickers for a moment, and shows great mounds of moldy rags upon the ground, then dies away, and leaves a denser darkness than before, if there can be degrees in such extremes. He stumbles down the stairs and presently comes back, shading a flaring taper with his hand. Then the mounds of rags are seen to be astir, and rise slowly up, and the floor is covered with heaps of negro women, waking from their sleep, their white teeth chattering, and their bright eyes glistening and winking on all sides with surprise and fear, like the countless repetition of one astonished African face in some strange mirror. Mount up these other stairs with no less caution. There are traps and pitfalls here, for those who are not so well escorted as ourselves, into the housetop, where the bare beams and rafters meet overhead, and calm night looks down through the crevices in the roof. Open the door of one of these cramped hutches full of sleeping negroes. Pah! They have a charcoal fire within. There is a smell of singeing clothes, or flesh, so close they gather round the brazier, and vapors issue forth that blind and suffocate. From every corner, as you glance about you in these dark retreats, some figure crawls half-awakened, as if the judgment hour were near at hand, and every obscene grave were giving up its dead. Where dogs would howl to lie, women, and men, and boys slink off to sleep, forcing the dislodged rats to move away in quest of better lodgings. Here too are lanes and alleys, paved with mud knee-deep, underground chambers, where they dance and game, the walls bedecked with rough designs of ships, and forts, and flags, and American eagles out of number. Ruined houses, open to the street, whence, through wide gaps in the walls, other ruins loom upon the eye, as though the world of vice and misery had nothing else to show. Hideous tenements which take their name from robbery and murder. All that is loathsome, drooping, and decayed is here. Our leader has his hand upon the latch of Almack's apostrophe and calls to us from the bottom of the steps, for the assembly room of the five-point fashionables is approached by a descent. Shall we go in? It is but a moment. Heyday, the landlady of Almack's thrives. A buxom fat mulatto woman, with sparkling eyes, whose head is daintily ornamented with a handkerchief of many colors. Nor is the landlord much behind her in his finery, being attired in a smart blue jacket, like a ship's steward, with a thick gold ring upon his little finger, and round his neck a gleaming golden watch guard. How glad he is to see us! What will we please to call for? A dance? It shall be done directly, sir. A regular breakdown. Apostrophe, the corpulent black fiddler, and his friend who plays the tambourine, stamp upon the boarding of the small raised orchestra in which they sit, and play a lively measure. Five or six couple come upon the floor, marshaled by a lively young negro, who is the wit of the assembly, and the greatest dancer known. He never leaves off making queer faces, and is the delight of all the rest, who grin from ear to ear incessantly. Among the dancers are two young mulatto girls, with large, black, drooping eyes, and headgear after the fashion of the hostess, who are as shy, or feign to be, as though they never danced before, and so look down before the visitors, that their partners can see nothing but the long fringed lashes. But the dance commences. Every gentleman sets, as long as he likes, to the opposite lady, and the opposite lady to him, and all are so long about it, that the sport begins to languish, when suddenly the lively hero dashes into the rescue. Instantly the fiddler grins, and goes at it tooth and nail. There is new energy in the tambourine, new laughter in the dancers, new smiles in the landlady, new confidence in the landlord. New brightness in the very candles. Single shuffle, double shuffle, cut, and cross cut, snapping his fingers, rolling his eyes, turning in his knees, presenting the backs of his legs in front, spinning about on his toes and heels like nothing but the man's fingers on the tambourine, dancing with two left legs, two right legs, two wooden legs, two wire legs, two spring legs, all sorts of legs, and no legs. What is this to him? And in what walk of life, or dance of life, does man ever get such stimulating applause as thunders about him, when, having danced his partner off her feet, and himself too, he finishes by leaping gloriously on the bar counter, and calling for something to drink, with the chuckle of a million of counterfeit Jim Crows, in one inimitable sound. The air, even in these distempered parts, is fresh after the stifling atmosphere of the houses. And now, as we emerge into a broader street, it blows upon us with a pure breath, and the stars look bright again. Here are the tombs once more. The city watch house is a part of the building. It follows naturally on the sites we have just left. Let us see that, and then to bed. What, do you thrust your common offenders against the police discipline of the town, into such holes as these? Do men and women, against whom no crime is proved, lie here all night in perfect darkness, surrounded by the noisome vapors which encircle that flagging lamp you light us with, and breathing this filthy and offensive stench? Why, such indecent and disgusting dungeons as these cells would bring disgrace upon the most despotic empire in the world. Look at them, man, you, who see them every night, and keep the keys. Do you see what they are? Do you know how drains are made below the streets, and wherein these human sewers differ, except in being always stagnant? Well, he don't know. He has had 25 young women locked up in this very cell at one time, and you'd hardly realize what handsome faces there were among them. In God's name, shut the door upon the wretched creature who is in it now, and put its screen before a place, quite unsurpassed in all the vice, neglect, and devilry, of the worst old town in Europe. Are people really left all night, untried, in those black sties? Every night. The watch is set at 7 in the evening. The magistrate opens his court at 5 in the morning. That is the earliest hour at which the first prisoner can be released. And if an officer appear against him, he is not taken out till 9 o'clock or 10. But if anyone among them die in the interval, as one man did, not long ago, then he is half eaten by the rats, in an hour's time, as that man was, and there an end. What is this intolerable tolling of great bells, and crashing of wheels, and shouting in the distance? A fire. And what that deep red light in the opposite direction? Another fire. And what these charred and blackened walls we stand before? A dwelling where a fire has been. It was more than hinted, in an official report, not long ago, that some of these conflagrations were not wholly accidental, and that speculation and enterprise found a field of exertion, even in flames. But be this as it may, there was a fire last night, there are two tonight, and you may lay an even wager there will be at least one, tomorrow. So, carrying that with us for our comfort, let us say, good night, and climb upstairs to bed. Asterisk, 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 asterisk. One day, during my stay in New York, I paid a visit to the different public institutions on Long Island, or Rhode Island. I forget which. One of them is a lunatic asylum. The building is handsome, and is remarkable for a spacious and elegant staircase. The whole structure is not yet finished, but it is already one of considerable size and extent, and is capable of accommodating a very large number of patients. I cannot say that I derived much comfort from the inspection of this charity. The different wards might have been cleaner and better ordered. I saw nothing of that salutary system which had impressed me so favorably elsewhere, and everything had a lounging, listless, madhouse air, which was very painful. The moping idiot, cowering down with long disheveled hair, the gibbering maniac, with his hideous laugh and pointed finger, the vacant eye, the fierce wild face, the gloomy picking of the hands. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.